Hey everyone, welcome once again to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells, back from 1 week off. I'm still somewhat sick, but I don't sound sick anymore, so that's good enough to come back, I suppose. You can get a hold of us if you ever want to email us questions or anything like that. Just thoughts about NXT. We'll read them on the air if we got the time. We did do 8 1 week, and some of them were multi-point emails. So we've proved that we'll try to take on as many as we get. We got just a few this week. PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. That's where you can get a hold of us, and I'll try to remember to mention that again when I start going through those emails later on in the show. I do have two other guys with me. Oh, first of all, I'm Kelly Wells. I write the NXT Tracker at the site. I take a look at an NXT talent, talk about their future prospects. I wrote one about the Street Profits. Hasn't gone up yet, but we'll look for that soon. We also have Justin James here today. Justin, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Justin James, PWT's NXT TV correspondent, and you can find me on Twitter at Justin_M_James.
And Tom Staup is here as well.
Indeed, at Tom Staup on Twitter, and I cover the NXT tapings at Full Sail. So the reports go up if there's a taping at Full Sail. You can check them out if you want a glimpse ahead into NXT's near future. Although here on the podcast, I will avoid spoilers.
All right. So we've got a handful of things today that really did seem kind of equal in their importance. A lot of little moving parts, but moving parts nonetheless. I'm going to actually start with the Roderick Strong and Pete Dunne replacement of Mustache Mountain in their match against Birch and Lorcan. Not exactly an enhancement match. pretty competitive for an enhancement match. I mean, Birch and Lorcan never win, but they always look good doing it. Dunne and Strong, it's funny. Roderick Strong came out and they said, hey, if you find a partner, then you can go ahead and do this. Now, this should have been the most obvious thing in the world, but for some reason, I just wasn't thinking about it. So when Pete Dunne shows up, I go, oh, yeah, right, duh. They've been, like, teasing this for forever. But obviously, a very stiff match, as you would assume it would be. So first, let me just ask Tom, who was there for this this tournament match. What'd you think?
Yeah, well, I'll start by going back to something that was actually mentioned on Wade's Monday Night Raw post show by the live correspondent, that somebody that went with the live correspondent felt like they were watching a television production rather than a show that was playing to the live audience. And that rings so true, you know, for that experience. And these NXT tapings, man, you know, you sometimes feel a little bit lost as to what's actually going on. There was no preface whatsoever that we were not getting Mustache Mountain. Not that I was disappointed with what we got, but it was a big surprise. You know, there were a lot of dropped jaws and scratched heads just going like, whoa, this isn't the match we were expecting. And so live in the crowd, I too was not expecting Pete Dunne. So that was a great surprise, although watching the build up to it on TV, it did seem pretty obvious. But I guess we can't say that it's too much of a disappointment, because like you said, this was still pretty much the same style match that we wanted to get out of Oni and Birch, Lorcan and Birch rather, against Mustache Mountain. So and this is like you mentioned, this is exactly why we like Lorcan and Birch, because they go down fighting and they are really wily, and they did look really good in this match with some of their stiffest competition that they've ever had to face. And I really enjoyed watching the story start to be told of Roddy and Pete sort of forming a chemistry and learning to work together after they've been competitive rivals and earned each other's respect, which is not too dissimilar to what Lorcan and Birch did. But I liked that they were never not on the same page, but you could see them still working to get totally on the same page in this one. And I very much enjoyed it. And even though, you know, it seemed pretty obvious that whoever was going up against Lorcan and Birch was going to advance, it was nice to see them advance, even though we weren't even expecting them when we were talking about the brackets, because it's a promising little tandem.
Yeah, the respect story always works. That's what's hilarious. It, like, they do it over and over and over. And I know we always go back to the Kevin Nash line about how there are only 9 reasons to fight each other in wrestling. And I won't rattle off what I remember of that or anything, but it's like they tell the same stories over and over in different ways, but the respect one, I'm always a sucker for it. I always just love guys who have hated each other in the past, kind of finding that. And I think Pete's expressions and everything he's doing is so pitch perfect. I mean, this is about as good a face turn for a heelish face like that I can remember happening. Like, they're doing it so well, and they're putting him on the face side of the ledger without taking away all the things that made people want to cheer him in the first place. Like, Pete Dunne could really, really be something. I know his size might get in his way, but he really, really is a special talent, and I think he can be something big. Justin, what did you think of this?
Once again, I get the feeling that you guys are getting copies of my reports right after I send them out to Wade, because you guys both really summarized what I said here. This is a timeless story in the world of wrestling. We've seen this countless times. These two are just knocking it out of the park. It's given Roddy an opportunity to show a little bit less of that kind of Sami Zayn, Johnny Gargano baby face that he was trying to do that wasn't working, and has allowed him to get back to a more edgier in-ring character. And it's allowed Pete Dunne to continue to I don't know if I want to call him a babyface, but he's definitely a tweener at this point. They've acknowledged the fact that the fans just won't boo this guy. So they're giving him a way to do all the things he always done and still be Pete Dunne without compromising his character in the slightest, and yet acknowledge that the fans will not boo this guy. And I think it's pitch perfect. The match was just really outstanding. This was a real treat to watch. Lorcan and Birch are totally clicking in the ring. I think that they are underutilized, gravely underutilized, but they always maximize their minutes. And really, I think that the story you tell to yourself to cover for the fact that this was around a 9-minute match, right? You've got a former challenger to the NXT title and the current UK champion, playing two guys who I think between them are like 1 in 10. The story that you tell is that these two have been teaming up for a while, and that's why they're able to succeed. We're Dunn and Strong, are new to each other, but I really like this, and I like where it's going.
Yeah, and I think this will set up a really fun semifinal with these guys against Sanity. The right side of, I know from the moment they gave us the brackets, we all thought this side of the bracket is really bizarre and weak. And now just, I don't know, now that we've got this match sitting in front of us, and one of them is going to, and one of these sides are going to New Orleans, it seems like whatever final we're going to get is going to be a lot of fun. And Tom, I know, probably already knows what that final is, unless this didn't go all the way to the end of this taping. I'm not sure how many shows left we've got in Tom's taping, but we'll see. We'll see where this goes. But good stuff. Next, let's...
Yeah, and I'll actually cut in real quick. I will say this was the first episode of this taping, so we do have three more.
Oh, this is
more.
Just the first. Okay.
I believe there are three more. I did want to throw out there, though, what do you guys think about where Tyler Bate lands in all of this? Just because I ask, because when I was sitting there in the audience with no preface as to why the switch was made, my mind got going and I was like, oh, well, there was probably some backstage thing that they're only going to show us on TV that we're not going to see here in the taping, where Velveteen Dream attacked Tyler Bate and they had to have the last minute replacement. That's totally what's going to happen, of course. And it was not that at all. Whether or not the knee tweak is a legit thing that's keeping him out for a couple weeks, I don't know. Did that get your guys' wheels turning at all for him?
I don't know. I thought that it was pretty innocuous. I got the feeling that this was a worked injury, like with the specificity of how quick it was going to be, because knee issues aren't predictable. Like, you can't say, well, your knee is screwed up, you'll be back in 2 weeks. That's not really, I don't know.
Yeah. It's like you're either okay right then and there, or you're done for a while.
Yeah, it felt oddly short. So it feels like a worked injury to me, and I'm not super worried about Tyler at this point.
Convenient.
Yeah, I think that Mustache Mountain might have been a red herring all along. And it worked for me. So that's really how that came off to me. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Tyler work the tapings. So it just would have looked stupid if they said to you, he's going to be gone for 2 weeks, and then he shows up 2 hours later. Right. So maybe that's why they do that. So next order of business, and I almost forgot to write this bit down, the Ciampa segment that we've been getting week after week goes to its, I think, obvious but still really fun conclusion. It had to be this. It had to be leading up to this. So Johnny hiding behind a sign, but also under a mask, so those in the audience wouldn't be totally, like, they wouldn't be in on it completely, so they'd still get the pop when the thing came off. Yeah, it does look like we'll probably be getting that unsanctioned match, or whatever they want to call it, for New Orleans, and we'll be able to pay off this feud before we end up sending Johnny up to do whatever he's going to do on the main roster. So, again, a segment with not a lot of words, but I think this thing didn't overstay its welcome. Let me know if you guys thought that it did. Justin.
This, if Ciampa didn't talk today, this would have definitely been played out. Like, he had to speak today. Something had to happen. Something had to change. And it was a really great segment. I was so happy to see Gargano back. I liked the way it was done. Ciampa interacting with the people, with the audience. I liked how, you know, this whole thing, the whole story being told of him getting increasingly frustrated and angry and violent with the fans. You know, the thing where he slapped that sign on that old lady's hands and she gave him the thumbs down. The whole thing was just really done right. And, I'm looking forward to this. I like what they've done.
Yeah, and then Tom, anything on this? Yeah.
And yeah, this is where I come in with a whole bunch of live observations. Actually, the woman in the front row, I'm not sure if she would want me saying her name on air. She's one of the good ones. She's really awesome. She's on Twitter. She's easy to find. In the crowd, from doing the thumbs down there, she earned the nickname Stunt Granny, and she loves it. She was very tickled about that. But she's really cool. I think that Ciampa does a great job working the crowd. You know, for me, due to the awkward timing of these tapings, I hadn't seen, they actually showed us one of the segments of him doing this in Atlanta before the taping started, right before he came out, actually. So it like segued right into one another. And so to my knowledge, he had only done it once before, and this was only the second time that we were seeing him do it. I thought it worked well. I saw NXT staff or event staff passing out all of the Gargano signs, the small ones and the large ones. And I thought, well, maybe a super fan brought them. And of course, since then, I've seen the Atlanta shows, of course, where everybody in the crowd had them. So I imagine they did the same thing there. I thought maybe a super fan or a couple super fans like got together and printed all these out. And the staff is just like, oh, that's cool. We're not doing anything else. Let's help them hand it out. So I asked somebody, hey, WWE do this, or is this like, did a fan bring these? And the guy seemed pretty sure of himself, and he said, oh, no, WWE printed these all out and asked us to hand one out to every single fan. So just kind of I felt that was like an interesting observation that WWE manufactured that. I'm not sure how obviously that comes across on screen to somebody who doesn't have that prior knowledge. I feel it takes away from it a little bit, but clearly they're going for something for Ciampa to react to with those signs. And it's working, so I suppose it's fine. They did do a perfect job. Obviously, it comes across that way on TV, but nobody knew that Johnny was there until he burst over the banister. It was like, wait, why did everybody freak out all of a sudden? Oh my gosh, look who it is!
Yeah.
I will say something that happened after the taping, and this does not pertain to any storyline. I just, you know, I felt like it was, this is, if it was going to be relevant to anything that we talk about leading into New Orleans, this was going to be it. Afterwards, every once in a while, they'll do something outside of Full Sail Live. Most recently, it was the Street Profits out there standing on top of that car. And this time it was Johnny, and he was just addressing the crowd, and it was... You know, the guy's short enough that it was hard to tell who was even up there that everybody was crowding around. But once you figured it out, you could hear him saying, I'm not allowed in there, but I can. What did he say? Oh, shoot. I wrote it in my report. If you want to know word for word what he said, it's in my report. But he was basically saying they won't let me in there, but I can be out here. They say we are NXT, but I am NXT. And the whole crowd was kind of like blocking the flow of foot traffic. So Johnny himself kind of like a tour guide, like directed everybody off to an out of the way place in the parking lot and said that he said, I want to meet every single person here and please don't push and shove. I've got nothing else to do tonight, so I'm going to be here for a long time. So that was really cool. And just another interesting thing there. And at risk of being even more long-winded, I did think it was funny. He sent out a tweet tonight during the show saying he was parodying the Billy Crudup MasterCard commercials. And he said, like, oh, ticket $25, poster board $2, finally getting to punch Ciampa in the face, priceless. And I got a kick out of that just because the tickets are not $25. They're $15 for the front row, $10 for the bleachers. But,
oh, wow.
You know.
All right. Well, I will say that I absolutely 100% thought that they were handing those out probably from the first week. I thought that they were probably handed out. But hey, means.
Yeah, that was my assumption.
Yeah.
It did look pretty blatant in Atlanta.
Yeah.
They were all identical.
Yeah, right. So I don't know. It's fine. So.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. Someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
On to Cassius Ohno versus Adam Cole, our main event. I really liked this match a lot. I thought both guys worked within their characters really well, and I thought this was a massive step forward for the Adam Cole character. Thought it was a good idea for him to not have his cronies there to beat cleanly a guy that is there to absorb losses, is a good start, and to look really good doing it. I thought, I thought Adam looked pretty good here. I thought Cassius looked great here. I thought he looked motivated and stiff, and he always is pretty good. But you just forget because of his place on the card sometimes just how good he can be. But this was a match that really got me. Now, Regal did mention an announcement for next week here. And I will say that although I don't typically read spoilers, before even last week's show, which I thought I'd be on, but I ended up having like the throat thing, I went to one of the wrestling sites that I read, and it said, hey, non-spoiler announcement about New Orleans. And it's this major spoiler about a match that's going to be on New Orleans that I would have liked to see happen organically. So I actually know what this is about. And I won't give away what this thing is about other than to say it's no accident that it happened while he was talking about Adam Cole. And it does seem, given what this announcement's going to be, it almost makes me think that those guys are listening to PWT Talks NXT and taking some notes. obviously, probably they don't care about us at all. But
they're having a super kick versus suicide dive indie star match.
Sure. Yes, that's it. Wow. Word for word, you picked it up, Justin. No. But yeah, I think it's going to be a good use of personnel. What they're going to announce next week. So that'll be cool. But yeah, this was our main event. Really had the feeling of looking stiff. And I will say, before I forget, loved the leapfrog boot spot where Adam Cole looked like he was going to do a leapfrog over a charging Ono. And Ono just stood there and like big booted him out of the air. It was hilarious.
Fantastic.
Just a great spot. Might as well get Justin's Adam Cole talk out of the way first.
I'm really curious who your kid thought was going to win this match. And that's not a joke. I really am curious.
He actually packed it up when, and I hope Harley's covering his ears. He packed up when he saw Aaliyah come out.
Ah.
Yeah, he said, I'm going to bed, Daddy. But he did comment right before they said, hey, wow, she's from the same city as Bobby Roode is, isn't she?
Oh, wow.
Totally observant. Wish he could be that observant on other things. I thought the match was good. I really did. And don't act shocked. You know, I did enjoy this match. However, I think this match did no favors to Adam Cole. Because, you know, a couple things here. Cassius Ohno is a well-known gatekeeper. And you really shouldn't go 10 minutes against a gatekeeper on a Wednesday night. 10-minute match against a gatekeeper is a takeover. Is a takeover move. It's not a Wednesday night. You know, Wednesday night against a gatekeeper should be like 5 to 7 minutes. The other issue is that Cole had to hit his finishing sequence twice to finish off Ohno. And that's a big no-no, especially on a non-takeover. You know, as it is, even on takeovers are different from, you remember how it used to be like you can only kick out of finishers on WrestleMania, and now it's kind of spread where you can kick out of finishers on any given Sunday night, and maybe even on a Monday night. For NXT, you only kick out of takeovers on WrestleMania weekend takeover and Brooklyn. That's the only time it's allowed. And so for Ohno to take Cole's finishing sequence twice on a Wednesday night, it defines down Adam Cole. It makes him look bad. I think the two men worked their tails off. I like the match. I think the booking had some poor decisions here in terms of length match, the amount of offense Ohno got in, and the fact that Ohno kicked out of that finishing sequence.
I hear all you're saying, and I thought all these things when I'm watching it. I think for Cole that having this win and then being in the main event slot may override a lot of the issues. For me, that's what I decided anyway. I will say, though,
yeah,
I'm really
the win.
I'm really with you as far as kicking out of the finisher. You don't need a gatekeeper kicking out of finishers, and that part I definitely agree with. Tom, what'd you think?
Well, real quick regarding that upcoming announcement, that was definitely a situation where WWE was trying to get ahead of the news curve, because I did see them put out the news themselves, just like they did with War Games and they did with Asuka's retirement. So that may be why they said it was non-spoilery on the site that you were checking out. I'm excited for it. So we'll talk about that next week, I guess. I didn't have an issue with Ono or for it taking that long to beat Ono, just because other competitors, arguably better competitors who would be stacked higher than Cole right now, have taken that long or longer to defeat Ono, most recently Gargano. Granted, Gargano was coming off of a losing streak and title contention was on the line, so the circumstances were a little different, but that didn't really occur to me. I will say that this probably was my favorite match at this taping. I'll never like the name Cassius Ohno, but names aside and that aesthetic aside, his matches recently have been working for me. And going back to our very first episode here at PWT Talks NXT, I'll speak for myself, I wasn't thinking too highly of Ohno, and he's been putting together some work recently that's been turning me around on that. Obviously, as we seem to find reason to talk about every single week, I am very high on Cole, and this felt like a justification match where everything I've been hearing about him from the live events and everything that I've been seeing from him that I want to see more of in a single match that I see people, that we've talked about plenty, that he just hasn't put it all together all at once. I feel like I got that from him in this match, and I felt that it might shut some people up. My favorite part of the whole thing was when he feigned the injury. Not just because of how well he played it off, but because live, I mean, I didn't think anything of it, probably just because, you know, just like the rest of us, I watch wrestling, you know, almost every minute of every day, it feels like sometimes, but there was a hush that went over the crowd. People thought that it was serious for a minute there, and you could just feel that chill of people thinking like, oh man, this guy just actually hurt himself. He really worked the crowd. It was great. I guess the other thing I'll throw out there is that the taping observations, the cameras did not catch this, but I felt like it was put in better context when Ono was coming out and Ronaldo said, you know, he's had trouble putting together wins lately and he's coming out on the losing end a lot. I thought that was an odd observation to make, since Cassius doesn't really have a storyline going right now. I think I want to say that's the first time we've heard commentary bring something like that up about him. You know, we notice it if we pay attention, but we're supposed to think of him as a worthy competitor. So that was said out loud. After the cameras cut at the taping, Ono, out of frustration, shoved the ring steps, and you could hear a gasp in the audience because no one expected him to express that frustration. Usually after his matches, he's interacting with the crowd and still smiling and being all happy. And then when a ref went over, or when the ref went over to calm him down, he shoved the ref out of the way too and stormed off to the back. So with the mention of a losing streak and him behaving that way, even though it didn't end up on TV, I'm wondering if we might be getting a heel turn coming from Ono, and if that might mean that his gatekeeper status is not a permanent, or if it might mean that they just want him to start working with some different people.
Right. They need a heel gatekeeper for a while. So the same thing you do with Big Show and Kane.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah.
The unbeatable guys who lose to everyone. Right.
Yeah. The only other thing I'll throw out there, which I was surprised not to see on TV, I don't know if maybe some sort of deal fell through or whatever it may be, is that there were some Oakland Raiders players in attendance. And, well, you know, the kind of thing where they card them out for, you know, like one little quick appearance on camera, and then they're gone. They didn't mention them by name at the taping. They just said, oh, and here they are. And then they weren't there anymore. And this was the match that they were there for. So they didn't mention that on this episode, unless I looked away at the wrong moment and they did. Or maybe I said something I wasn't supposed to say yet, and they're going to use that footage later. Maybe the Raiders were only available at that time of night, and they weren't able to come out later when it would have been more relevant.
Right. or maybe they don't play for the Raiders anymore.
Yeah, right.
Or maybe they got in legal trouble because the NFL's got a little of that. So who
just a little
knows what happened there. Ember versus Aliyah. Not a whole lot to say about this one. Foregone conclusion. I will say I bemoan the loss of Aliyah's cat ears. I really, really like them. I just said I like them, so I don't know what the heck they were thinking. But yeah, that's the only thing here. Otherwise, kind of a paint by numbers step forward in the Ember and Shayna saga. Not a bad one. Just kind of an obvious little move. Ember gets a little non-title win, and which I would have thought that we'd see Charlotte do this last Tuesday, but they're getting weird with that storyline. But Natalya gets paid a ton of money, so, you know, have her win some matches here and there. So Ember and Aliyah, anything on this segment worth really bringing up, Tom?
Just very briefly, I was pleased with it might be an odd thing to point out, but I was pleased with the camera work in it. Because watching this live, it was kind of a stinker, and I hate to pick on her, but I feel like it was mostly Aliyah. She came across live like she was just putting herself in position for Ember's moves. And sure, that was her role, but it almost looked like a practice match. Like she was just sort of happily looking up at Ember like, okay, so you're going to do your eclipse now? And the camera hid all of that. So the match came across much better on TV, and that's pretty much all I got on that.
I was gonna say, speaking of clumsy, something just happened in the background to one of you guys. I didn't notice any of that. That is a bummer, but I will say that it explains the very long-ish stay in NXT for Aliyah potentially. So, because I really like what she's done as far as a character standpoint, but. Oh, well, I've definitely seen some matches live mostly where you see somebody really, really get into position, and it's unfortunate because you do want to buy into it because it's still real to all of us. Damn it. Justin, anything here?
I can only say that I, too, commented in my write-up on the lack of cat ears.
Well, there you go.
Although she was called the Cat's Meow by one of the commentators. I don't know if that's a pre-existing nickname. I only just noticed it tonight.
It doesn't count. Yeah, I think they've said once or twice before. But yeah, the cat ear thing, it's just one of those things that made her stand out.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Now she just has an ombre like tons of people do. Like they're just sameifying her. It's no good.
Yeah.
Like, let her be Aliyah.
It was what it was. It was just one of those little tweaks that make your character stand out. Aliyah, if you're listening, cat ears, bring them back.
Yeah.
Oh, after what I said, I hope she isn't.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
Tom, you need to learn to phrase your criticism better.
Yeah, I need to use a favorite term around here and start hedging.
There you go. I'm going to read our email from Andrew Gamble. It's not a question, but it is about the women's division. So often we'll talk about, like when we're working up towards a takeover show, we talk about how there could be two women's matches on the show, but it's a very, very rare thing indeed. And I think we always kind of suggest, oh yeah, we'll look at how often this happens. I always say, yeah, I'll take a look at it after the show, and I never do. Well, Andrew did us a solid, and he sent us this. Hey guys, no question for now. Not sure if you did your own research, but there were a few takeovers featuring multiple women's matches. Takeover Respect had Asuka versus Dana and Sasha versus Bayley. London had Asuka versus Emma and Bayley versus Nia. Unstoppable had Bayley versus Bayley and Charlotte team against Dana and Emma and Sasha versus Becky. So yeah, I'd have to say that the six women on one takeover is probably a record, I imagine. So there you go. Not surprised it happened a couple of times with Asuka because she dominated that so much you needed to build up other stars. So not surprised that we had a couple of them happen when she was on top. But yeah, Andrew, thank you for the stats there. That helped us out a little bit. And then the one other piece of the show I wanted to talk to you before we got to before I get to what they announced for next week and then the couple more email questions we got Andrade coming out there with Zelina Vega, but this time Andrade did all the mic work. I thought that this was the right time for this. And, you know, he was fine. He's no Zelina on the mic, but I thought that they really needed to get him some time out there, and really, really liked that Zelina didn't take the mic afterwards, because we know she can talk. We know that she can sell the match. We know all that. So I thought that it was an important thing to let him take this moment and not have her end up outshining it with her own mic work. So anything on this Andrade segment and the impending feud with Aleister Black, Justin?
I think that that Almas came out. I think this was not just the right work from Almas, but the right promo. Or he has just lost his cool, you know, because of the way Black disrespect Vega so much. And I like the thing that they did where they bleeped him out. You know, it just sold this idea that Almas has been pushed over an edge, that Black has gotten under his skin. And I think that's good because, you know, this is a recurring theme that we're seeing with Almas as champion, where the babyface is able to goad Almas into opening his mouth and saying something he shouldn't. Right? That's how Gargano got that match. Which almost, you know, it almost cost Almas the championship. So, you know, I like this, the way it was done. I thought that Almas was fine on the mic, and you're absolutely right. I like the way Vega did not take the mic. I also noticed that she was wearing an extremely tall set of heels, and maybe that's a subtle reaction to Black's comments about her height.
That actually is a really funny touch, if that was the idea. And, not the kind of thing I notice. It's just not. So it's cool that you noticed that.
Do you love wrestling? Are you in or around New Orleans during WrestleMania weekend? Then come check out Ring Rust Radio Live from the Hilton Garden Inn New Orleans Convention Center on Saturday, April 7th from 2 to 4 p.m. local time. Tickets are only $10 and available on PayPal via ringrustradio@gmail.com or on patreon.com/ringrustradio. Don't miss the boys of Ring Rust Radio.
Tom, anything else on this segment?
Yeah, you guys said it. And this is the third time we've seen a championship promo from Andrade. And I felt like this was the first one where he actually handled the heckling crowd really well. And it came across well. And I too liked that Zelina let him do all the talking. And I too liked the bleep, because although lip readers might have been able to tell that the word he said was crap, not something that's normally bleeps, the bleep, if you don't know what he said, makes you believe that he said something that much worse that you're definitely not supposed to say on NXT TV. So I thought that was a nice touch, because calling Aleister a piece of crap was like, ooh, well, I mean, everything else was going really well, but you probably could have come up with something better there. But right. That's nice. They kind of got the best of both worlds. They were able to say something that was friendly to the children's ears in the audience, but also comes across as more gnarly on TV.
That explains it, because I was reading the lip, and I was like, he didn't say anything, it looked like, that I would have bleeped.
I was looking down at that moment, so I didn't actually look up, so I just naturally assumed he said what I thought he said. That's pretty funny, actually. We've seen some interesting bleeping in the past, and that we've seen it work where Brock said, and this is where I swear for those of you listening who care, where Brock was doing that that segment with Heath Slater when he was trying to get his job and had to beat Brock, and said, "I got kids." He goes, "I got kids too, and I'll tell you what, I don't give a shit about your kids." So, you know, stuff like that can be really utilized well. Also, one really unfortunate bleep way back, and I don't know if you guys remember this, but this was SmackDown years and years ago. I'm going down memory lane because we got time. We're running short on this show. But Big Show was talking about Kai and Tai, and he said those two goofs. And
oh no!
Somebody thought that he said an Asian slur.
Oh no!
So they bleeped.
Oh no!
And Big Show is like, if you've ever listened to Big Show in interviews, you know for a fact that he would not do this, even though he was working heel. Like, so he says goofs, and if you watch it, you can tell he's saying goofs, but that's not what they heard. So like the live, so whoever was on UPN at the time bleeped it, and man, he caught hell for something he never said. Yeah, but that's just an unfortunate one I wanted to bring up, because why not? Because we got time to go on pointless tangents. So for next week, we got a few things announced. We do have one of the semifinal matches for the Dusty Classic, the Authors of Pain versus Street Profits. I hazard to say I'm most excited about this match and all the tournament so far. I am really interested to see how they work this match in the confines of this tournament, because these guys did work together, and I thought it was well done. Montez is just an awesome, awesome bump machine, and I really thought that this came off well and will come off well again, so we'll see where they're headed with this. We do get the welcome return of Lars Sullivan, because we've been missing our monster, and we get the announcement, Regal's announcement, that two-thirds of your hosts right now already know about. So yeah, that'll be a good time, but nothing we didn't already know about. No other mid-card matches announced for next week. So with that, I will get to our questions. We got a question from Harley R. Paget. You may recognize him as one of the guys who's on this show, but he's not here this week. Hey boys, since I'm not on the show this week, I've got a question for you three. What's one wrestler from the past that you think could have been a big deal in NXT today? I was just watching an old Raw on the network and was reminded of how underrated and how terrific Owen Hart was. He never got a chance in the main event scene in his day, but the idea of Owen versus Neville or Almas or Gargano, sign me up. Love the show. Keep up the good work. Harley. P.S. Is it true that Kelly Wells was named after popular WWE diva Kelly Kelly? I read that on the internet somewhere. Now, that's asinine, because I'm older than Kelly Kelly, so she's clearly named after me. I will say that I work with one other huge, huge wrestling fan, a guy named Romeo, and he calls me Kelly Kelly. And you know what? I have forgotten to be bothered by it. Like, he's been doing it for so long, I just accept it. So call me Kelly Kelly if you must. And, you know, she was no great shakes in the ring, but she was pretty and all that. So I could do worse than to be Kelly Kelly. I will say, in relation to his example here, Owen Hart is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And when I had a son, I was going to name him after Owen Hart. I was going to name him Owen James Wells after Owen James Hart. That's how much I absolutely adore the work of Owen Hart. Was 100% going to do it. Wife was on board. She was very happy about it. And, I never had a son, so I didn't have my Owen. And my daughter, and this is probably moving enough that I don't want to say it, she's 13, she might change her mind, but she, because I wasn't able to, wants to name her son Owen James. God, I should not be bringing this up, because, wow, I'm actually kind of emotional about that. But anyway, getting past Owen, I think this is a fun... Oh, who did kind of have his shot at the main event. He did have his match with Brett. Obviously, Undertaker versus Underfaker was above it, but he had his cage match with Brett. But this is kind of a fun question in a lot of different ways you could take it. Who from the past in NXT today could have been great? And take it how you want to take it, Justin.
You know, I have to admit that, you know, I don't go back, you know, a million years with WWE or wrestling to have a deep, deep conversation on that. But, you know, I think that I'd love to see some of those classic, you know, guys like Arn Anderson. And I know we kind of got a taste of Arn Anderson with Scott Dawson. But I just think of, like, I'd like to see somebody like Arn Anderson in NXT. And just one of those true old school wrestlers. I think, you know, that, you know, everything I've seen of, you know, Ric Flair would just be so much fun in NXT, that big personality, for sure. And maybe I might just be partial to Ric Flair, you know, living in Columbia, South Carolina, and, you know, you can't walk down the street without hearing people wooing at each other still. But yeah, I think Ric Flair and Arn Anderson would probably be a lot of fun the next day. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would have really been a great stomping ground for Arn, who was never main event. He was main event adjacent, if that makes sense.
And he was in the Four Horsemen.
And Rick would put him over sometimes because Rick absolutely respected the hell out of his buddy Arn. And so he got some real big wins over Rick in his career a couple of times here and there. And is really one of the greatest tag team wrestlers of all time, greatest tag team heels of all time. Tom, what do you think?
Well, I absolutely love this question. And it sent me a cherry picking down some of my favorites on the network. And I thought of it in two different ways. Initially, I was thinking, before I reread the question, I was thinking of it in terms of if instead of a developmental system that we didn't hear so much about, that you really had to be local and attending the shows to know about, if back in the day, and whatever day you choose, they had something more like NXT that was more accessible on a wider level and booked similarly. And so my first pick was somebody who I actually still today don't know as much about as I would like to, but everything that I've seen from him makes me want more. And eventually I just need to dive into this guy's library, I guess you could say, matchography. And I feel like if something like NXT had been around in his time, it's the kind of thing that from what I've seen from him, he would have really thrived in. And that is Brian Pillman.
There you go.
Probably a similar answer to Owen, in a sad sense, since they had just so much potential and then that got cut short. But every time I see anything that that Pillman does, when I'm going back and watching old WCW stuff or whatever it may be, it's always my favorite thing on the card. And I'm not going to say too much more than that because again, I don't know as much about the guy. That was part of why I picked him, because I feel like something like that at that time might have helped introduce me to him even more. So I reread Harley's question and I started thinking of it as more of a time travel type thing. And I guess we kind of got this a little bit with the Vaudevillains, but it was funny because coincidentally that very same day I was thinking how fun it might be. I guess we kind of got it with the Revival too, but how fun it might be to have a gimmick where somebody actually is like a transplant from the late 70s, early 80s. And that's probably more indie territory because it's just so cartoonish and not believable at all. But in my fantasy world where I'm booking a wrestling territory and nobody comes to see it because I do crazy storylines like that, that might be something I'd consider. But anyway, thinking of it in terms of somebody from a time period in the past being transplanted into today's NXT and the type of matches they would have, I thought about it similarly to Justin's pick of Arn Anderson. And it came down to somebody who I feel was ahead of his time in the ring, but because he was of that era, he was still obviously very old school. And every time I watch what he did in Mid-South, in particular in the early 80s, whether it was a heel or a babyface, anything this guy did, it fires me up and it makes me want to see him get beat. It makes me want to see him win. And he's a pretty darn handsome guy, too. It's Paul Orndorff. He's just magnetic to me. And another guy that I can want to continue learning more about because I don't know everything about him. But from my exposure in Mid-South and, the early WrestleMania era WWF, I really gravitate towards his work. And like I said, I feel like he was ahead of his time. And so it could be someone who would match up well with someone like a Cassius Ohno, perhaps, is the first person that pops to mind in today's NXT, but also still bring that old school flavor that might be missing a little bit when we're getting an influx of more people like your Adam Coles and your Ricochets and your Leo Rushes.
Okay, I have put a ridiculous amount of time in my life into watching TV, watching wrestling on TV, so I will say I do have quite a bit of history with both the guys you talk about, and I will say that it is worth diving into that history. Also, in both cases, it's terrible that we lost Pillman at a young age, but in his case and in Orndorff's, careers were cut short by, or at least good parts of their careers were cut short and beset by injuries. Pillman's last couple of years in the ring were not great, but he was very, very good before that. One of the very best of his that was on free TV that I can suggest is actually the very first episode of Nitro, Brian Pillman versus Jushin Thunder Liger. Definitely yes. A match you should go back and see. Yep. Orndorff, I don't go back quite far enough to see a ton of Orndorff, but at his height, he was great. He finished off, he was working heel in WCW, and there was an odd storyline they did where he got his ass kicked on the ramp by Flair and Arn Anderson, as it happens, and whoever else was working Four Horsemen at the time. I want to say Benoit, and maybe they still had Roma at this point. I don't remember, but yeah, he essentially put over them because he wanted to put over somebody as ending his career. But he had an arm issue where one of his arms was, gosh, I don't remember what it was, but I remember that the issue made it so one of his arms was literally bigger than the other. The other one couldn't bulk up. So,
oh, like, that sounds familiar, yeah.
In his last handful of months, if you know it and you're looking for it, you will see it, and it's the most bizarre thing in the world. But yeah. But that's what happened to Orndorff. But then he
worked, it's interesting, like, that you, oh yeah, go ahead.
Like, when guys live into their, you know, from his era, when they live long, they never can get out of the business entirely. Like, he worked matches well into his 50s years later after that.
And it's funny that you mentioned the Liger match, because it's specifically that match and then the subsequent fall brawl. I want to say it was 2 out of 3 falls with Mark Mero that really put Pillman on my radar as a guy I need to check out. And I will throw out there that if anybody hasn't seen it, the a little bit of late 81, but mostly early 82. If you just start at the beginning of 1982 in Mid-South on the network and watch the storyline that goes on between it's surrounding Ted DiBiase, it's funny to hear Boyd Pierce pronounce that name in so many different ways, but the storyline with Paul Orndorff and Bob Roop is really what put Orndorff on my map. It's great old school storytelling, and it's the kind of thing where it's one of my favorite things in wrestling is going back and watching that old stuff that I'm not familiar with at all. And it's new to me, and I'm sitting there on my couch reacting to it like it's new, and these guys are getting over with me, and I'm like, oh man, they're retired, but I'm still so excited watching their older work.
Right. Also wanted to say on the subject of time travel that Chikara did a time travel story a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I love Chikara, and all the weird stuff that you want to see in a wrestling show but don't, go watch Chikara, because they do all that weird stuff that nobody would do. They did a storyline. Okay, so there's this guy, Archibald Peck, and he was an evil drum majorette, which is as hilarious as it sounds. He's very tall, extremely skinny, and he was an evil drum majorette, major. And he wore like this. It was ridiculous. Okay. But, he was on certain major shows. He would come out as Archibald Peck, work heel. And then like 3 matches later, without explanation, when a heel was doing something bad, he would come out in different futuristic clothing and like, help justice be served, and he would change the outcome, and then he'd leave, and nobody would talk about it. Nobody would talk about what had happened. And
it's like the mysterious stranger in Fallout.
Right, sure. And then down the line, Archibald Peck, the character, starts having a change of heart, and he finds a time machine, and you realize, oh my god, Archibald Peck found a time machine, and he went back as a babyface to right wrongs that he had helped create. Like, that was the storyline they told. And somewhere online, I was like, wow, why did they do that? That's so stupid. I'm like, if by stupid, do you mean the greatest thing ever? Like, they put, like, pro wrestling is so stupid as it is. Like, why would we draw the line at time travel. Like, I'm glad that WWE doesn't do it. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not sad that there's an indie promotion that was like, yeah, time travel. Why aren't we doing it? That's great. So, not to bury the lead. I think it's too late for that.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
I took this question in a very different way. I think that NXT is very, very useful. Let's take Authors of Pain as an example. When they showed up, they were impressive in size and impressive as an idea, but they were not good in the ring. They were okay, but it didn't look like there was a lot of potential there. And they grew so much in front of our faces, and I think it was useful for them to actually do that on TV and to get that kind of feedback and to be working TV shows while they were developing. So what if, now this is going to sound ridiculous to those who remember them, but what if somebody like Techno Team 2000, what if a tag team like the Gemini, like these teams that were all look and no talent, what if they had an NXT? And I just thought, God, they were like Techno Team 2000 was really over with kids for the month or two that they had them. Like, what if they actually had the resources to put into them, but they didn't have that. They didn't even have a training thing, period, when Techno Team 2000 was around, which was early 90s, I want to say. Maybe even late 80s, but I think it was early 90s. So I just feel like a lot of guys in the past that hit their heads on that glass ceiling and were not given chances, like that could have really, really helped them out. Otherwise, I'm not going to jump in with anything else because I love, love, love the ideas of both Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. Those are great. And Harley, a fun question. And so I'm going to get to the one question that came from a person who doesn't help host this show. This is from Brian Alston. Brian from Phoenix, senior PW Torch VIP subscriber. Hello. Number one, rumor control. Any truth to the internet rumor that Justin James is related to the James wrestling family? Bullet Bob Armstrong, Road Dogg, Brad Armstrong, etc.? Like we were saying before the show, God, we're glad that this became a thing. Keep these stupid questions going, these rumors. So Justin, what do you say? Are you related to them?
There may be some similarity in terms of our good looks.
Sure.
However, it's not exactly true. Actually, the celebrity relationship is LeBron James, and I was named after Justin Trudeau.
Okay, right. So do you use the pump handle slam in your arsenal? I don't think we see enough pump handle slams.
I have been known to deliver one to a child in a pool. you got to protect the workers.
Right, yeah.
Unlike, say, Road Dogg. you got to protect the boys. I've been known to land a couple moves. If you've ever seen that dude who does the RKOs off the diving board, that would be me doing that kind of thing to my kids.
All right. And Brian's real question, which current NXT stars could you predict that could go at least 10-0 at WrestleMania? This includes women and tag teams. Let me preface this by saying nobody. I don't think anyone will do it. And a major reason is now I'll play along because this is fun. I like this question. But a major thing that happens is when you come up and you're already a big deal and you're going to be a big deal, you get a good match and there's a good chance you're going to lose that first match because they're not going to be thinking about the future. Like there's no streak to be built. Nobody will even think about it. No booker will even think about it unless you're at least, let's say, 4-0, which has only happened like 5 or 10 times ever as it is. I remember at one point people saying, hey, should Bray Wyatt be the one to start the next Undertaker streak? And now it's just asinine to even think of somebody having said that, because it's just like, for many reasons, that was just never going to happen. So I don't think that there's any chance that that'll happen. I don't even think like somebody like Asuka will do it. Well, Asuka's not going to wrestle long enough. She's not that young now. She's 36 or 37. But we do have some options down there in NXT, I suppose. While I try to think of someone to jump to mind, Tom, go ahead.
Well, I also agree that it'll be nobody for the exact same reasons that you mentioned. And, you know, I remember the Bray Wyatt rumors, and I think that was just because he had the new ominous, you know, sort of supernatural gimmick. So it was just sort of transferring into the new younger person who, if you look at the landscape of the current roster, I guess you could say he's the new Undertaker, even though that's, like you said, asinine. So if I had to pick somebody, and it's not even somebody in NXT, but they were in there recently enough that I'm still going to go with it, you know, forcing myself to pick an answer here. And that would be Finn Balor. I think that he'll probably win at WrestleMania. We'll see what happens. They haven't said anything about him coming out as the Demon yet. But the way I would see it going is that maybe he gets a couple happenstance victories, whether he's the Demon or not, at Mania. Currently, I believe the Demon is still undefeated on pay-per-view. So, on the main roster, that is. So I feel like whether or not he shows up as the Demon at this WrestleMania, he could start a thing where he does at WrestleMania, and then it becomes beating the Demon at WrestleMania is the new thing. And he could still lose on regular pay-per-view just like Undertaker did. But, you know, so yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, but that's the one scenario that pops to mind that I could see as being conceivable.
All right, Justin, 10-0, who's doing it?
10-0, you already cut me under with my answer in advance. I do a quick look up here. I want to see how old Mickie James is.
I looked that up.
Okay, Mickie James is 38. Okay, I thought she was a little bit older. I think that Asuka's streak has been well protected. I think that, you know, the plan with Asuka has been for a long time to give her a streak. She's looks like she's being kept away from Ronda Rousey, who I think would be the one to beat Asuka, if anybody's going to be beating Asuka anytime soon. So the only question with Asuka is, can she make it to the age of 46 and still be wrestling in WWE? That's going to depend on a couple factors. Obviously, her desire to do it, her financial position, you know, whether or not she's taking care of herself money-wise, WWE's willingness to put a woman over the age of 40 on television, which I think with Triple H assuming more and more control of the company would be more and more of a possibility. He values ring match quality a lot more than, you know, whether or not somebody would pay money to buy a copy of Playboy with them in it. So I think that would be something in her favor. I think the fact that, and we know I don't like to talk about, you know, about this stuff a lot, but, you know, she seems to be maintaining her physique well. You know, she's taking care of herself. And I think that you put that all together. I think that if a female wrestler is going to make it to the age of 46 in WWE, Asuka's got a good shot. And if she's going to be going to the age of 46 in WWE, I think making her 10-0 at WrestleMania would not be an awful idea.
Yeah. And there are some other... His question was about current NXT. Obviously, we don't see anybody there, but
yeah.
But I don't know. It's not like I wouldn't say it's impossible for, like, a Velveteen Dream. He doesn't seem like the right kind of character, but it's not impossible. Aleister Black is the right kind of character, mm-hmm. but I don't know if he'll go that long either. And if he does, maybe. I think his act is going to translate. I've never been this sure of anybody's act translating. I really, really think it's going to translate to the main roster well, because you don't need to explain it to somebody, even if they're seeing it for the first time.
Yep.
There's no backstory is necessary.
And along the same, and somebody else like that would be Lars Sullivan. It's just that WWE, you know, we were talking about, you know, the unbeatable Big Show and Kane.
Yeah.
Lars Sullivan's in that grouping of, you know, I could see him as, you know, suspension of disbelief and not knowing how they book shows. I could see Lars Sullivan going, no way anybody's going to ever beat that guy. The reality is that guys like Lars Sullivan on the main roster get beat all the time. They have horrible records because that's their job.
Right. Yep, Lars Sullivan, I see 2 years of a really good push and then 50 turns in your future.
Vladimir Kozlov.
Yeah, oh boy. I ran into Vladimir Kozlov at an airport, and he's huge, and he was holding the tiniest phone I've ever seen. Like, it looked like he could have swallowed it, and it was already, I thought I was gonna laugh already, because, like, I didn't notice that he was there until I almost ran into him, and he looks, and, like, in his very intimidating sound Russian, just picks it up and goes, "Hello." Like, that was it. That was my entire Vladimir Kozlov experience, and when I saw the size of the phone, I thought I was going to bust out and laugh right there in front of him, and I just booked on past him, and I said to my wife, "That was Vladimir Kozlov." She goes, "I thought he looked familiar."
That's fantastic. I ran into Big Show in a veterinary hospital of all places, and he was wearing the tiniest short shorts I'd ever seen. He was clearly just there to pick up his dog and get out of Dodge, but I had to be that guy that went up. He had just done an angle on Raw where Kane, like, gouged out his eye or something crazy like that. And so I went up and I said, "Hey, your eye looks good." And he looks at me and goes, "It's just a show, kid." And I was like, oh.
It's funny because, you know, from everything I know about Big Show, he's, like, the nicest guy in the world.
Right.
And so for him to, like, spoil a little kid's day like that doesn't seem like, yeah. He must have been really upset about his dog.
Openly, just weep openly in front of him. Oh my God, what have I done?
Make sure you come and work my birthday party to make this up to me.
Okay, we thank you, everyone, as always, for listening to us. That is our show. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on Twitter at Spooky Milk. I don't tweet a lot, but I do respond if you tweet to me. Justin, where can you be found?
I am on Twitter at Justin_M_James, like LeBron and Trudeau.
Naturally. And Tom?
And you can come harass me on Twitter at Tom Stout.
Okay, cheers, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including the review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.